Greetings to the crew of the Guyan Navigation Experiment and to friends and students scattered across space and time and anyone else who cares to listen. This is your nav, John Lash speaking, recording, I should say, on Monday the 4th of June in the merry, merry year of 2012. I'm sitting outside on the terrace of my little casa in Andalusia. The full moon is setting toward the west, setting in the constellation of the Scorpion where I was born. As a matter of fact, the position of the moon right now is pretty much exactly where the sun was on the day I was born, positioned just above the reddish gold star Antares in the heart of the Scorpion. So if you ever wonder if a scorpion has a heart, you don't have to wonder anymore. I'm the living proof that it does. And if you want to see what the heart of a scorpion looks like, then just look at my face, and that will tell you everything you need to know. It's wonderful out here this morning with the cats on the terrace. There's a very, very light breeze. The sky is beautifully clear. Andromeda has been rising through the early hours of the morning. And I took a walk up on the hill above the house around 4. I could just see Saturn setting the western horizon. And I picked up a treasure when I was up there that I'd like to offer to you. Hot from the paws of the main turtle. Before I do so, though, let me say it's been quite a while since you've heard from me, and certainly I haven't sent any crew notes out for 6 weeks or more. Also haven't looked at the crew note mail, so I'm in for rather of an inundation when I look into that later on today. But I just wanted to say thanks to all of you. My gratitude is without words for those of you who stick with me and with this experiment, which is bigger than me and bigger than all of us put together. That's what makes it such a wonderful experiment. It really is a transpersonal and magical adventure. So thank you for your thoughts of me in this time. I'm doing very well, better than ever, in fine health. Happy, and my simple life is secure and easy. And I just want to reassure you all, some of you may have been crawling up the walls and wondering what the fuck is happening with the nav, is that you haven't missed a thing, so don't be concerned about that. You haven't missed a thing during the time, the lapse of time since I've sent out the last written crew notes, which are 17, as I recall. No, I would never leave you in the lurch like that. I might seem to leave you in the lurch, but no, not really. And so I can tell you that it's been an extraordinary period to the extent that massive events are taking place in correction, but you haven't missed anything by not being informed of those events until now. There's nothing that you can do about them. Even our participation in them is only minimal. It's only something that we can accomplish at the very fragile and tenuous edge of our witnessing, because the wisdom goddess is deep, deep into the waters of her own memory. And those waters are celestial waters, where no human mind or memory can dive. Not even her turtle can dive to the levels of recall where Gaia Sophia has been navigating for the last 6 weeks. But I will tell you this. There are three factors in her recapitulation which are extremely difficult for her. Three factors which require that she goes into deep introspection, as it were. And in those states of introspection, she's already artistic, don't forget that. In those states of deep introspection into her own history, into her own memory, even at the very moment that she resumes a linkage to the Pleromic aeons, those recesses are not available to us, even to a Tertan, at least of my accomplishment. Perhaps there are others of higher accomplishment who could reach into those realms. But I'll tell you what she's looking at, that she has to look at on her own, on her lonesome. She's looking at three elements in the great, great story of this planet, which is her biography. Three elements which are very, as the French would say, glauque, very opaque and deep, difficult to penetrate. And it requires a tremendous concentration of her powers to look in this direction, into herself. Well, the wisdom goddess does that. She looks into herself. She introspects. And these moments of introspection can be noted but not and detected but not necessarily witnessed. We are the witnesses to the Nahual of the earth. This is the wonder and splendor of this experiment. It is the wonder and splendor of your very lives as human animals. And it is the highest attainment of any human creature to witness the Nahual of the earth. But there are parts that we cannot even witness. And we detect when the goddess reaches those moments of intense introspection by the stall of the lunar apogee. And the lunar apogee has been in a stall for about 2 months and is just now pulling out very, very slowly, to the extent of about 1 degree every 10 days. So by the middle of June, it will be a couple of degrees off from the stall point, and by the middle of July, 3 more degrees off from the stall point. And it's my, there's just a moving light up here, it's my confidence as a Tertan to tell you that we are at the decisive moment, the midpoint of correction. And at this decisive moment, the shift of correction, the momentum of the process, can really begin to be felt, seen, known, witnessed, participated, and engaged in a most dramatic fashion. Now, as we know, as crew members know, by the way, I'm changing my syntax with this talk, and I ask you to hold me to my revised syntax. I'm not going to use the word we anymore. I'm not going to talk about we, because there is no we. Humanity is finished at the midpoint of correction. Everything that we thought that humanity was from our behavioral imprinting and our conditioning culturally and historically is finished. There is no we. I do not speak of we. I will speak to you, and I will speak of myself, John. And I will speak of Kalikas and of the Anthropos. And I will not use again, I do not use again, ever again, the term human being. I've banished that term from my vocabulary. There is no such thing as a human being in the world of John Lash, sitting on the terrace in Spain on June 4th, in the merry, merry year of 2012. In the Turton's reality, there is no such thing as a human being anymore. There are only human animals. And that's what I am. And proud to be one. So I speak now of human animals. And I speak of the plight of human animals in relation to, in their bonding and empathy with, the planetary animal mother. She's in a deep introspection, our mother, the mother of human animals. And she is looking closely at three things which are extremely challenging for her to penetrate and to draw realizations from. She is introspecting so that she can draw realizations from something deep in her own memory core. Something so deep that it cannot be reached and co-witnessed even by the highest accomplishment of shamanic skills. At least not in my range, baby. But I can tell you what she is contemplating. What are those three things or factors that represent opaque points in her own cosmic consciousness as an aeon? One of them is how she formulated the gender difference between men and women in Anthropos 10. And connected with that is the incident of the shearing of the Anthropos template, which caused the division of those sexes. When we review and empathize in the story of the wisdom goddess, we recognize, say I'm using we, this is not correct. Those who review and empathize in the story of the wisdom goddess, which is the sacred, single, sacred birthright of the Anthropos itself, know that she experienced a number of traumatic events that were not anticipated. This is what makes her story interesting to those of us, Kalikas, and members of the Gaia Navigation Experiment, who are really engaged in this story, who are living this story with her. The unanticipated events, the anomalies, are really decisive in her story. And one of those was the shearing of the Anthropos template so that the human species in its Anthropos 10 variation ultimately fell into mitotic reproduction, which was not her original intention for us in the trimorphic protonoia of this experiment. Second opaque factor and subject of her deep introspection is the adulteration that she allowed with the archontic factor. Now, I'm not going to elaborate on this right now. Let's just put it on the back burner for a moment. But let me say this, that the most difficult and inscrutable passage that I've encountered in the Nag Hammadi writings occurs in the Apocryphon of John. Now, the Apocryphon of John, or Secret Book of John, exists in three manuscripts in the Nag Hammadi collection. And there is a fourth version, which is a parallelism in the teachings of, in the writings of Irenaeus against the heretics. This is a very long treatise and very complicated. It has cosmological and anthropological details in it, which are very difficult to decipher. But in any case, it contains the most perplexing and baffling and troubling passage in all of the surviving Gnostic writings. And that is the passage that describes how the wisdom goddess committed adultery with the archons. Such is the scholarly translation. Quotes, committed adultery. The more correct translation would be how the Aeon Sophia allowed the archons to adulterate the human genome, to adulterate it. She allowed it. This did happen. And how this happened and why and what are the consequences of it is one of the most difficult, probably I would say, the paramountly most difficult factor in the Sophianic vision story to be understood. And I only have an inkling of what this is about. We'll call it the adulteration episode, and we'll leave it at that for now. Currently, the planetary animal mother is deeply engaged in an introspection upon that episode, and then also upon a third. What I say to you now, I have not said before, so this is a scoop. But I suspect it may be something that those of you in the Gaia Navigation Experiment have considered on your own terms. I know the way the myth works. I know that it's alive, and that when you take it into your imagination, it fertilizes and directs your imagination in a way that nothing else can. So it's quite probable that some of you have considered the point that I'm going to raise right now. In the expansion of the fallen goddess scenario to the 2.0 version, I showed that there were events that occurred in episode 4 in the Pleroma prior to Sophia's plunge that had not previously been recounted. Mainly what happened was that she observed, along with the other aeons, the company of aeons, including Christos, the function of anointing, and Thelete, the intended. She observed 9 previous experiments with the Anthropos strain. The memory of this recall, the memory of this pleromic event, has been captured in mythology in the theme of the 10 avatars of Vishnu. So the 9 previous avatars of Vishnu refer to 9 previous experiments with the human genome, the Anthropos, in other worlds, in other Earth-like planetary systems. Not in this planetary system. Obviously, Sophia could not observe anything happening with the Anthropos in this planetary system before this planetary system arose. And the story says that this planetary system arose as a metamorphosis of her own torrents of organic light once she had departed from the bounded region of the pleromic core. So, it is clear in the trajectory, in the plot structure of the vision story, that those 9 previous experiments, which failed catastrophically, did not occur on this earth. However, there were similar events of that kind that have occurred on this earth. So it was one thing for the divine Sophia, in the presence of the pleromic aeons, although she was more or less artistically and unilaterally fascinated by what she was observing, like a genius student in a laboratory would be. although she was able to observe in that sublime, from that sublime perspective of the aeons, 9 previous planetary experiments with the Anthropos, does not mean that she had any idea how Anthropos 10 would unfold and evolve in the very planetary setting provided by her organic light body, which I'm sitting in right now. So dawn is coming up over here to the east. The sky is beautiful pastel, getting light and pearly before the sunrise. There are many intimations in nature of the organic light, more and more all the time. In fact, the whole daytime sky is turning into a massive intimation of the organic light. For those who wish to see it. You know, there are a number of ways that you can test yourself or gauge yourself in this experiment. It's not metaphysics, my folk, my friends. You know, it's not make-believe. I've said this before. And this is not a game of pretending. Although we use the power of pretending, that is to say our imaginative power, we, those engaged in the experiment, use it. There is no we. Crew members engaged in the Gaia navigation experiment use their imaginations in a way that can be tested. And there's a couple of simple ways to test if you're on board with the experiment at the halfway point we're now reaching. We in the crew, that is. One of these is if you are able to observe the night sky, the blackness of the sky, and the diamond sparkle of particular stars and constellations in the sky. This is a setting for testing your perception and the depth of your involvement in the experiment. The daytime sky is another setting to test the depth of your participation. I was up on the hillside this morning around 3 or 4 and could see the stars very well, although it's a full moon night, so naturally the opalescent radiance of the moon diminishes the observation of the ambient stars. But I had the thought, while I was up there, if you can call it a thought. In fact, I had 2 thoughts. One thought was, where is my next thought coming from? And after I had that thought, I had this one. I thought, this was my next thought, in other words. I thought, you know, there's a lot of people in the world, including very ordinary people, right up to the experts of NASA, or people who consider themselves to be experts in science and physics and cosmology. And all of these people share the same mindset that the universe in which the Earth exists and upon which we exist, the universe that we inhabit, is regular and steady and consists of permanent and practically unchangeable movements and cycles, and that the solar system to which the Earth belongs is, and you know this is the archontic paradigm, is fixed into a mechanism of clockwork mechanics that is completely rigid and cannot be changed. And so many people, from common ordinary people to experts, share the mindset that the action of the universe, of the cosmos, is fixed and regular to a degree of almost total permanent fixation. And my thought is, this was the thought that came, that those people would never even notice if it were not so. If it were not so that the orbit of the earth is strictly rigid and predictable through countless aeons of time, if it were not so that the sun always rises in the same place at the same season, as numerous people have already observed, is not the case. But those people who are able to observe that, such as myself and members of the crew, are really alive and awake to what the cosmos is. And those who cannot see it because of their mindset would not even notice if they were presented with evidence to the contrary. So we are looking for evidence to the contrary. Or to be more exact, because that's kind of a leading statement, we, the members of the Gaia Navigation crew, say, I'm going to stay with me. I'm going to kick it. I'm going to kick the we habit. Have the practice of observing in an open-minded way and observing in current time and in real time and trusting what our senses show us to observe if the universe and the earth and the stars and the sun and the moon are really operating as rigidly as some people believe. And so as you watch the night sky, you may find, and you watch the sun and the moon rising and setting, you may find that there are odd anomalies and variations that do not fit into this archontic paradigm of absolutely rigid and repeatable patterns. Then you're in the living cosmos. The archontic cosmos is only a mindset. It's a mental paradigm. It is not the real, living, animated, spontaneous cosmos. Now, I might seem to be regressing here. Ah, the sun is just going down behind this oak tree. Ah, in the eastern sky, I can't tell you how balmy the morning air is here on the terrace. It's an absolute elixir of life. You can drink it through your pores. You can drink it on your eyes. There's a slight wind coming up as I speak. You know what that means. I had a strong whisper from our girl this morning, a very strong whisper, and it came to me. She spoke to me through the ratama. The ratama are these reeds that grow up here all over this valley. In fact, this is called the Reed Valley. And the ratama is kind of like, I think, a rattan plant. It's just a very willowy, beautiful weed that sometimes grows to the height of, say, 8 feet. And later in the summer, it has buds on it. But for now, it just has very green, thin green veins, thin green limbs of ratama, very supple, like the supple bodies of nymphs and maenads. Very, very sensuous. And when the wind blows from the northwest over the hill of Ava Gardner Oaks and sweeps down the side of the hill where I live, it stirs the ratama. And so the distant sound of the wind here in this valley, which often sounds like the breathing of the sea itself, because the sea is not far. I can see the Mediterranean right out there, about 30 miles as the crow flies. But the sea of wind in the hills channels down into the Rotama as if the Rotama were like a loudspeaker device, or a sound reduction device. And so when I walk past the Rotama and it brushes my ear, the tips of the Rotama, and the wind comes down from the hill of the Ava Gardner Oaks, and she speaks through the hushing, rushing, hollow sound in the Rotama. She spoke to me today, this morning. And she gave me a great, great clue about her planetary magic. She gave me the most beautiful, heartening, thrilling clue to her magic. Curiously, the clue she gave me was historical. Now, let's just sit back for a minute on our haunches here, my fellow human animals. And let's just consider that. Planetary animal mother, whispering out of the depth of her introspection, gives to the crew decisive clue to her magic in the form of an historical reference. Now this is absolutely, for me as a Turton, pretty fucking wild. And it is pretty momentous. This day is a momentous day in my life as Gaius Turton. Because until now, and some of you know exactly what I'm going to say right now, even before I say it. Until now, it has only been the wildest possibility that the divine Sophia can link her consciousness into the full scale of human historical memory in this kalpa. In order to make the correction historically and in social and historical terms, in other words, to put it in plain English, in order to really shift human behavior away from the ugly direction it's going and to correct the social, the experiment of Anthropos 10 in social terms, she has to engage in the historical memory of the behavior that brought us here so that it can be corrected out of remembering it, because that's the only way that any animal can correct its behavior, and she's an animal. The fact, and it is a fact, it's an experiential fact, and I'm not making this up, that she whispered to me today through the Rotama. And what exactly she whispered to me was this: when magic became a crime in 1215 AD, is the moment in this time when magic returns for real. End quote. Now, how can the moment in 1215 AD and this moment now be the same? Well, obviously, in terms of linear and historical time as we understand it, that cannot be true. That cannot be so, as human beings of the past have understood it. That cannot be so. But somehow, in her recapitulation, Gaia Sophia sees the year 1215 and the year 2012 as the same. And she recalls, the way she recalls it, that was the year when magic became a crime. Now, what happened in the year 1215, historically speaking? Well, that was the year of the Fourth Lateran Council, out of which came the declaration from the Vatican, or from the Pope of that time, of the dogma of transubstantiation. And that dogma was the statement that in the Eucharist, in the Mass celebrated by the Catholic Church, the wine and the bread, the two elements of the sacrament, the host, were transubstantiated into the blood and flesh of the Savior. That was a proposition of satanic magic, and is to this day. And so what Gaia means when she says, when magic became a crime, magic was actually criminalized before 1215 AD. All pagan magic was forbidden to practice under the penalty of death by the Roman emperors in the time of Constantine and Justinian. So what does it mean that magic became a crime? This is how she remembers it. She remembers that magic was criminalized. Pagan magic was criminalized long before that. But when this dogma of transubstantiation was declared, it was the outer symptom, the outer clue to an event in which the practice of magic became a crime against humanity. And since that time, there are people on this planet who practice magic as a crime against humanity. That is how the crime is to be understood. Not something that is criminalized. You see the irony, you see the beautiful subtlety in her disclosure. There's really a teaching contained in that whisper that came down from the hillside today. The teaching is that the power of magic, of planetary magic, which was known, shared, and celebrated, and revered, and respected by human animals from time immemorial, became appropriated or hijacked into a criminal act of genocide in 1215 AD. And that moment is the inverse of this moment right now. And whatever happened then is due to be reversed by the planetary magic that happens now, right now, June of 2012. The planetary magic that comes from the planetary animal mother herself, because it is the way that those who participate in her story ritualize and instrumentalize her animal powers. Kalika magic, planetary tantra magic, takes for its tools the rituals that channel the animal powers of the divine Sophia. The ritual acts of courting the mudras are simple acts that capture and catch the power of her animal magnetism, of the animal magnetism of the planetary mother herself. And we manage and direct this animal magnetism for healing and killing purposes, and for teaching purposes, and for pleasure purposes, lots and lots of pleasure purposes. But when I say we, I don't mean humanity, because humanity is finished. I mean those who engage in her story, crew members, Kalikas, planetary tantricas. Now, you might recall that I had said that there are three things. I was in the process of saying there are three points of deep introspection concerning the recapitulation of the wisdom goddess in these 3 years of correction. Three points that are very opaque and difficult to penetrate. One is the formulation of gender in Anthropos 10 and the shearing of the template that produced that threw the species into mitotic reproduction, or obligated the species to undertake mitotic reproduction would be a better way to put it. Second is the adulteration episode. And the third is her memory, her direct recall of previous kalpas of this experiment with Anthropos 10 that went bad. That is to say, not an overview of experiments with the Anthropos in some other planetary systems. Oh, no. But a view, a direct recall of what has happened to Anthropos 10 in previous kalpas of this experiment on this planet, which is her body. So you see the difference. That recall process is extremely excruciating for her. Excruciating. And as far as I can tell, arduous. It is an arduous haul for the Aeon Sophia to drag her memory back through the previous incidents in 26,000 year periods on this planet when humanity went badly wrong, and we have gone wrong before down the same road that, and they have gone wrong before down the same road that they are going now. If, as the old Chinese proverb says, if we don't change the direction we're going, we're likely to end up exactly where we're heading. That's an old Chinese proverb. And that's just about the last thing I would care to say, using the syntax of we. I don't consider myself to be in the company of humanity anymore. That's something that has changed since the last time I reported to you. Something that has changed since April 2012. But I am still in your company, in the company of the crew, people who have done the planetary tantra vow, Kalikas, warriors and lovers, and I have the best of company that anyone could ask, anyone could ever want. So I don't miss humanity. You know, I haven't talked much about love, and yet at times I feel compelled to say something about it because it's such a horrific subject. So here I go again, feeling compelled to say something about love. And while I'm at it, I would like to add that sitting here in the beautiful light of dawn on my terrace with my cats, it's my great pleasure to make a commitment to those of you who follow me and who like me, basically, and who find value in what I'm saying. I can make a commitment to you. On this day, that I would use my consummate skills as a teacher to show you what happens when the power of love really explodes in your life, as it exploded in mine in May of 2008. Now, I'm not talking to amateurs here, and I'm not talking to anybody who doesn't, you know, who may not have had the same experience as me. In fact, I recently met someone who had completely parallel experiences to me, with me, from that time of 2008 onward. So I'm not putting myself in a privileged position here. I'm not saying I'm the only one who has the power of love operating in his life. Far from it. Far from it. I'm sure, I'm certain that you do. In many, many ways, have this power erupting in your lives. So what my commitment is really just a kind of a John Lash kind of thing, really. It's just my character to speak in this way. I happen to know something about love that's a little bit hard to take. And I'd like to put it to you from the core of my experience to the core of yours. In a ruthless and loving fashion. And that is that more the power of love, I'll put it in the first person, let's be fair. The more the power of love erupts in my heart, the more it rips me out of the human condition. Now, I'm not going to say it rips me out of humanity, although it actually does, but I'm not going to go that far. I'll be gentle on this point, okay? I already told someone who was my witness in through those dramatic moments of 2008 that I was being ripped out of my humanity, and that message was really difficult for that person, who was a woman, to accept. In fact, it was sort of like I was throwing acid in her eyes. And it, what is the word I'm looking for? It did violence to her own sense of love in the way that I explained that and showed her in a completely unmitigated and uncensored fashion exactly what I was talking about. So I won't say that the power of love erupting in me, capacity to love finally blowing like a volcano, like a soft flow of lava right out of the heart chakra constantly. I won't say that it's ripping me out of my humanity, because that's a little too brutal. But I will say that it's certainly ripping me out of the human condition, and I strongly advise you to come along. You know, the human condition, my friends, is like a bad rap. Just imagine someone was accused of a crime that they didn't commit, and then they had to serve out a life sentence for that crime. That's what the human condition is like. It's like serving a life sentence for a crime you didn't commit. Anyway, this is how a Kalika views the human condition. This is how an innocent country boy from Maine views the human condition. Because in my innocence, I accept no blame for the behavior of this benighted species, which is now finished. And only magic survives. And only what lives in her magic survives. Like my two cats live in her magic. Like these oak trees, these carobs, these wild olives, like this valley of reeds lives in her magic, in the animating power of her magic. Live there. That's where the beauty is. That's where it comes from. And so, the shift now in correction is a shift into the new being of the human animal. Who can know and use her animal powers. That's the kind of animal you want to be. And that's a sensuous, savvy, and dangerous animal. You know, that comment, I call it a comment. How casual can you get, John? That whisper of revelation that I heard on the hillside this morning, really something else. You know, I've been stalling in a way. I've been stalled as well. Why haven't you heard from me? Let me reassure you again that you haven't missed a thing. I would not let that happen. I would not let this much time go if you had missed anything. The three key events that she is recapitulating, you can't follow. I can't even follow them myself. Do you see that now? I can tell you what they are, and I just did. You know, the gendering and gender split. The adulteration with the archons, and most painful and excruciating of all, her own memory of the previous fails of Anthropos 10 on this planet. The previous fails, previous failures of Anthropos 10. On this planet, which is her living body. So that's what's been happening during this stall of the lunar apogee before the face of Cetus, the satanic mask of Cetus, as I call it. And I have to tell you that I'm sitting here in the dawn with my cats, looking out the valley, breathing this air, and feeling, how can I describe? Well, feeling super alive, super, super alive, and grateful to be in her story, to be living her story, to carry it, grateful for the guidance that it gives me and for the sense it makes of this insanity of human life and for the direction and for the privilege of living in a transpersonal purpose. There is only one transpersonal purpose to live for. That is the correction of the divine Sophia. Everything else that you imagine. Apart from that is a delusion. But on the other hand, everything that you might imagine, whatever you might imagine, and everything that you can imagine in the framework of that story, in the weave of that living vision, that is real imagination. And it becomes real by living it. And so the world today is more real in its living, animated presence than it has ever been. And that is not just due to my realization or yours. It is due to hers, her realization. It is due to the consciousness of the planet herself sinking into the dark momentum of historical memory so that she can correct it. So, such are my reflections this morning. A very lovely, calm morning. The world is still in one piece. The planet is still in one piece. The predators, of course, are going out of their minds with perversity and violence and their visions of their own power. Getting worse by the moment. It's come to the point where to call them insane is just a gross understatement. It's like insanity beyond insanity. It is. It's really beyond insanity. The downfall, the demise of Anthropos 10. But it happens at the exact moment, and I don't know how it's going to happen, by the way. Could be very ugly, you know, ugly people go down ugly. This has been known to happen. Maybe it will be different if ugly people are taken down by beautiful people. If ugly people are taken down, if ugly animals are taken down in a beautiful way. I don't know. We'll see. I never guaranteed anyone anything about correction, you know that. But I can guarantee you that the world is more real today on her terms because she showed to one person who happened to be me what she is going to show now, what she is ready to show now. She showed to one person what she is ready to show now to everyone willing to witness. That is how she has synced into the historical process at the moment when magic became a crime. So that this moment in time allows the magic to return, the real magic. And that's the truth of this moment. In correction, this is your NAV reporting. And in concluding this little talk, which has taken us a long ways toward getting back in sync with each other, at least that's my intention. In concluding this talk, I'd like to mention two points. One is that regarding current timing, there was a perigee surge in the left claw of the scorpion, 30 degrees of the sign Scorpio, timed pretty closely to this lunar eclipse. And so the practice in the Gaia navigation experiment, as you know, is to follow the perigee surges along with the apogee surges And this is quite a dance. Really seems getting into this dance is quite an engaging process. At first, you don't realize what you're getting into. But I haven't spoken much about the Purji surges so far. And just let me say this. We're concentrating, I'm concentrating with you, not we. I'm concentrating with you on the apogee surges because these moments of the recapitulation of the wisdom goddess are so crucial, and these moments are real and testable events that manifest by an upsurge in the subliminal mind of humanity, and they are breaking through the subliminal layers of human mentation, of cognition and thought, overriding the mental radio that distracts the first attention of most people, because the first attention collects a lot of extraneous data like a magnet that picks up lint. And so people are always like monkeys sifting through the lint of their first attention. But the days are numbered when Anthropos 10, or what's left of it, you know, has the luxury of doing this and acting like a bunch of monkeys picking lice out of each other's butts for entertainment. Days are numbered for that kind of entertainment. With these momentous events in the recapitulation of the wisdom goddess, her memory and her beauty are breaking into the human mind in a tsunami of power that is irresistible and unmistakable to anyone who is still truly, really alive. Unmistakable if you are alive. So I'd just like to say that you haven't been missing anything either by a lack of reports on the perigee surges. The perigee surges have been one pan of the scales and the other pan of the scales. And, you know, that's sort of like there's some very remarkable events happening in world economy that are reflecting these surges. You know, I could comment on that even more than I have so far. The downfall, for instance, of J.P. Morgan, which is a controlled demolition of the financial structure of the world, was timed to the last perigee surge in 12 degrees of Scorpio in the right pan. And so J.P. Morgan is going to come down. It's the people who created it are bringing it down. And this is how it works. But it was timed to that. So there are interesting things happening in the perigee surges, but it's not essential to know for those of you to know in the crew and in planetary tantra to know what is happening until the venom is prepared. Now, what have I been doing for the last 6 weeks or 2 months? I've been mixing war paint and distilling venom. And when she delivers the venom, that's when we in the crew, you in the crew, start to pay real close attention to the perigee surges. Up until now, it's been difficult to follow the sense of the perigee surges. Remember, they indicate her action of divine alchemy. What that amounts to is that she's already calibrating how to kill off Anthropos 10 in the most merciful fashion, and calibrating Anthropos 11 at the same time. Now that's a pretty sophisticated, massively complex alchemical event, wouldn't you say? And following that event is sort of like trying to follow what my cat Nikki does with a mouse that she captures. She captures a mouse out in the field. She comes up here on the terrace. Don't you, Nikki? And she lays the mouse down, and the mouse is frantic and hysterical, starts to run around, and she bops it with one paw, and then she bops it with the next paw. And this mouse is going back and forth like a ping pong ball between one paw of my cat Nikki and another paw, because my cat Nikki is a horrible, horrible, terrible, dangerous, deadly predator like myself. And this is pretty much what has been happening with the perigee surges. One side of the scales, the other side of the scales, one claw of the scorpion, the other claw of the scorpion. It's like the scorpion is like a cat playing captured mouse with Anthropos 10. And it's amusing and entertaining to watch the cat get tossed back and forth from one paw to the next. But what you really want to pay attention to is when the venom hits. And I can tell you exactly when that is, because I'm the delivery mechanism. And happy to be. I've got a lot of venom in me, you know. Some woman who's very close to me, there are a couple, just wrote to me in the course of this evening. You know, it's funny, because we were talking about loving more than one person. Now, two or three, there's already the jackpot, but at least more than one. I mean, if you can't love more than one person, what are you good for, you know? Anyway, talking about loving more than one person, and she said, you know, this is a beautiful observation. She said, you know, the way that we love everyone differently. But the way that we hate our fellow humans is all the same. And I thought, that is fucking brilliant. And I have a lot of hate for humanity and for my fellow human beings. But I hate them all in the same way. And that hatred has been burning in my veins since I was 19 years old, when Kali stabbed me in the heart with a crystal dagger. And that hatred is something that I can only consider now as a fantastic divine gift. It's a power, and it's a responsibility to use it correctly. And I intend to use it impeccably as the syringe that delivers her venom to the human race. So the wind comes up as I say those words. Interesting how the wind comes up around here. People who have roamed about with me on the hills and done some courtings, done the Gayan Tantric vow, have noted how the wind comes up at certain moments. So on that note, I'll leave off until my next recording, which I promise will follow very quickly. No more delays. I won't leave you in the lurch. But remember again that you haven't missed a thing. And I'll start the next recording later today and pick up my little item, the little item that I mentioned at the beginning of this one, that the Turton has a gift for you. The Turton received a treasure on the hillside this morning at 4 a.m. under the moon in the scorpion. And I would love to share that treasure, and we'll do so immediately in the next recording of the NAV briefing. So on that note, I'll leave you for now with a thought that is floating in my mind in the clear air of the dawn. Not that the best is yet to come, but that the best the human animal can realize is yet to be discovered. Yeah, yet to be discovered. And this path, this practice, this experiment is the way to discover it. So there.